hoping for another station. Because I love having too many choices. No, really. Sarcasm. It's like a second language.
107.3 The Edge.
Calgary's iconic alternative.
We hope you love it.
From the Retro Bin,
1982.
Cause we're looking as cool as me.
to play another Canadian artist.
Yes, proud. Voted fourth best country to live in. Suck it, Belgium.
107.3 The Edge, Calgary's iconic alternative.
Stop music.
What are you on?
This is 107.3 The Edge, Calgary's iconic alternative.
Edge.
Calgary's iconic alternative.
A closet.
No, it's called a tiny house. Tiny houses are huge right now.
Not this one.
It's about freeing yourself of all the clutter of modern day life.
Where's the oven?
I don't cook.
Bathroom?
Outside. Anywhere.
How about a closet?
That's the one thing I don't have here.
Because you're living in it.
1073 The Edge.
Calgary's iconic alternative.
Thank you. If you grew up loving alternative music as a kid, I bet you can remember how many holes your favorite pair of Doc Martens had. Everyone had a pair of 1460s. In black or cherry red. Well, that was up to you. This is 107.3 The Edge, Calgary's iconic alternative.
Bring it.
I want to see you bring the heat.
Dish it out.
Hit it.
And dig in.
I want to see you bring the flavor.
Flavor Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Hey, honey. Did you see our heating bill this month? Wow.
Don't remind me. We're wasting too much money because of our old windows.
WindowMart is a trusted partner for windows and door replacement projects. Book your free in-home consultation today at windowmart.ca.
How to fix broken furnace. What's a heat exchanger?
You might not know how to fix a furnace, but we do. We're Reliance Home Comfort, here to take your call 24/7. And if you need a new furnace, ask us about our next day or we pay installation guarantee. Plus, right now, save 20% during the Reliance Team Member Pricing Event, where you pay what we pay. So if you need help now,
call on Reliance.
Conditions apply. See website for details.
Hi, I'm Scott Reeb of Cupboards Express. February is the last month of our double-double promotion. This is the slow time of year, so we are doubling down on the free to keep our workers busy. 16 double-double promotions to choose from. Pick any two, like half-off laminate countertops and supersize your uppers, or free handles and free delivery, or free premium finish and free upgrade to hickory. There's a lot of free going on down here, so it's a good time to buy cupboards. Double-double discounts at Cupboards Express.
You there, have you tried Subway's new Snackwich bundles?
Whoa, you're a bundle of energy.
But they're just $5.
Okay, chill.
There will be no chill. Get a toasty turkey ranch Snackwich with crispy potato rings. It's a bundle of a deal.
Oh, sounds tasty.
Or a hearty soup with a honey mustard ham Snackwich on Chabana. It tastes like a bundle of joy.
Yes, I get it.
It's delicious. And $5 at Subway.
Okay, bundle me in.
Price and participation may vary. Extras, taxes, and delivery additional. Expires February 16th, 2025.
Are you going to say it?
Yes way.
Home Network is here.
We are so lucky to be a part of this.
Every Thursday, watch heartwarming programs like an all-new Extreme Makeover Home Edition at 8.
We have 96 hours to build a house.
And Honest Renovations, starring Jessica Alba and Lizzie Mathis at 9.
Changing these homes, we can change families.
There's no place like it. Home Network. Stream on Stack TV.
Brought to you by ColorSpark. It starts with a spark.
Every single day, the Alberta Children's Hospital is here for kids. You can be too. Every dollar you donate through the Country 105 Caring for Kids Radiothon provides life-saving, life-changing, world-class care to kids when they need it most. Make a difference and donate by calling 403-802-2700 or at kidsradiothon.com. That number again is 403-802-2700 or at kidsradiothon.com.
Here are some shows you may or may not want to see. Full list at 1073edge.com.
Unplugged, Nirvana reimagined at the Jack Singer Concert Hall January 31st. Theory of a Dead Man Unplugged at Southern Alberta Jubilee Auditorium March 7th. And Bush Loaded, the greatest hits tour at Grey Eagle Resort and Casino April 25th. I'm Sarah Crosby, and I've seen all of Brooklyn Nine-Nine twice.
Here you go, some delicious and tasty music from the buffet. Don't worry, there's a sneeze guard.
1073 The Edge.
Calgary's iconic alternative.
Down, proving it good, and I just ain't looking.
speak.
Talk.
Yak.
Blabber.
Talk. Speak.
Yak.
Blabber.
Speak.
More music.
This is 107.3 The Edge, Calgary's iconic alternative.
Please don't.
already excited about my new weight loss secret?
Oh, yeah?
I just step outside for a bit and freeze my ass off.
107.3 The Edge, Calgary's iconic alternative.
Maybe he'll see a little better Saturdays.
Okay, something's different. Now actually reading notes from the listener suggestion box.
Which is new.
107.3 The Edge. Calgary's iconic alternative. Calgary.
Just a moment. I hear people wanting something.
What's up? This is Eddie Vedder from the band Pearl Jam.
Hi, this is Beck.
This is Gavin Rossdale of the band Bush.
Calgary's iconic alternative.
107.3 The Edge.
As rock and roll approached its sweet 16 birthday in the early 1970s, it was obvious that it had grown up quite a bit. With each passing year, rock was becoming more sophisticated in both sound and execution. The first wave of rockers from the 50s and 60s had grown up. They were now better musicians and could do more than play simple three-chord songs. Rock was also becoming more complicated because, well, because it could. It had the tools. By the early 70s, a four-track recording studio was hideously antiquated. People wanted to use studios with 16 and 24 track consoles and big tape recorders and racks of machines that could add cool effects to the music. Guitar amplifiers were bigger and more powerful, allowing for fatter chords and longer sustains and cooler feedback. And guitarists now had a huge array of foot pedals and other gear to help them create individual signature sounds. And let's not forget everybody at home. Home stereo systems began to improve. Hi-fi wasn't just for electronics geeks anymore. Everyone was looking to get big amps with huge speakers. You could even listen in the car. 8-tracks were clunky, but for the first time ever, you didn't have to depend on the radio for music when you were on the road. But then again, your city might have been lucky enough to have a progressive FM rock station. Wow, imagine music on the radio that was in stereo. But for some, things were getting a little too sophisticated. The musicianship a little too accomplished. The recording a little too slick. There were those who felt that the road to technical perfection was not a good one to be on. Something had been lost. It was time to get primal again. This is The Complete History of Alt-Rock, Chapter 2.
107.3 The Edge.
The Ongoing History of Alternative Rock with Alan Cross.
Welcome again. I'm Alan Cross, and this is the second part of a series on the history of modern rock. The first show covered all the deep background, and now we're ready to set the table for the big punk rock revolution of the middle 1970s. Now, this thing did not materialize out of nowhere. It had to be provoked into existence. And one of the people for that provocation was David Bowie. At the end of the last show, we left Bowie as a lost, wandering artist who couldn't make up his mind what he wanted to be. I mean, the man was taking mime lessons, for God's sake. He had recorded a series of albums, all of which went pretty much nowhere, and he was reduced to working for a company that made copies of legal documents for law firms. But as things turned out, this is the gig that was the most important job of all. See, Bowie had just endured a painful breakup with a woman named Hermione Farthingdale. They had this big fight, and that was it. Bowie was feeling all depressed and lost and lonely as things spiraled out of control. There was even a short dalliance with heroin. At the same time, maybe to distract himself, Bowie became fascinated by the American space program. The 1968 film 2001: A Space Odyssey had a huge impact on him, and when the Apollo program pushed towards a moon landing, Bowie was absolutely transfixed. If you weren't alive in 1969, it's impossible to explain how big the Apollo astronauts were. They were worldwide superstars. And out of all this, the science, the pop culture phenomenon, the breakup, Bowie wrote a very dark pseudo-folk song. Using a device called a stylophone, introduced to him by his buddy Mark Bolan, another legend says it was a dictaphone, but that's doubtful, Bowie recorded the very first version of a song called Space Oddity on February 2nd, 1969. That was the day after his breakup with Hermione. Several more versions and edits appeared over the next few months, but the definitive version was recorded June 20th and then released to the public on July the 11th, just in time for the Apollo 11 mission. Broadcasters everywhere, including the BBC, picked it up as an unofficial theme to the moon landing on July 20th. Now, you're probably familiar with the hit version, so let's have a listen to an earlier attempt. This is David Bowie in a demo version of Space Oddity.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. 10. Ground control 9, to Major Tom. 8, 7, 6. Commencing 5, countdown, engines on. 3, 2. Check ignition 1, and may God's love off. Be with you.
This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping.
That's an early, early, early version of David Bowie's breakthrough hit Space Oddity from the summer of 1969. Because of a chance meeting on the street with some unknown singer-songwriter named Elton John, Bowie hooked up with a producer who helped him record the definitive version of Space Oddity. That recording of the song eventually received worldwide attention as people speculated on the identity of Major Tom. Some guessed it was Frank Poole, the doomed astronaut in 2001 A Space Oddity. Another intriguing possibility might be Palm Major. Who? Well, he was a small-time entertainer who would later be known as the father of British Prime Minister John Major. Anyway, Space Oddity turned Bowie into a star, but he knew he was in real danger of being a one-hit wonder unless he could properly capitalize on this momentum. But how? By this time, Bowie had formed a new backing band that he called The Hype. He also had a new manager named Tony DeFries, who believed that if Bowie were to go anywhere, he needed a provocative image and a weird brand that had to be marketed along with the music. And this is why DeFries encouraged Bowie to experiment with makeup and costumes. Bowie bought into this plan, picking up several long, flowing, and very expensive gowns from a Savile Row designer named Mr. Fish. Now, Bowie had always enjoyed dressing to shock, even back in high school when he was a mod. But that was nothing to what he was up to in 1970. Long hair, dresses, and is he carrying a purse to hold his makeup? Now, today we'd say, well, big deal. But in 1970s Britain, this was beyond scandalous. See, homosexuality had actually been a crime in the UK until 1967. So, dude in makeup and long hair wearing a dress, that was as radioactive as a lump of plutonium. The outrage was so strong that Bowie was forced to change the artwork for his new album. Hundreds of record stores served notice that they would not stock the record if the cover featured Bowie in a dress. So for years, the original artwork was suppressed. Still, the album came out. November 1970. This is David Bowie with the title track of The Man Who Sold the World.
We passed up on the stairs. We spoke up was and when. Although I wasn't there. He said I was his friend, which gave us some surprise. I spoke into his eyes. I thought you died alone a long, long time ago. I know.
shook his hand. And made my way back home. I searched for home and land. For years and years I roamed. I gazed a gazeless stare at all the millions here. We must have died alone a long, long time ago.
David Bowie from his dress-wearing days in 1970. But he wasn't the only guy dressing like a girl and shocking normal mainstream rock fans. In the fall of 1971, four former teenage gang members from Brooklyn decided that playing in a band sounded way more fun than petty burglaries. So taking their name from the New York Doll Hospital, which was a real store on Jamaica Avenue in Queens that specialized in fixing rare dolls, the New York Dolls began scaring people in Manhattan in the spring of 1972. Their first gig was at a sleazy hotel in Times Square. They showed up wearing makeup and dressed in spandex and fishnets and professing to be gay. Or maybe it was bisexual. Didn't matter. It was just as weird. This was shocking. And yeah, people had heard about this glam rock thing that was happening in London, but it was nothing like this. The Dolls took that look miles further. And as for the music, all the songs were short and raunchy. No solos, no complex arrangements. And who cared if they could really play? It was back to down and dirty rock and roll.